Speaker, members of Parliament, St. Lucians listening, in particular constituents of Groseley. Madam Speaker, finally I've gotten an opportunity to make my presentation after what seems like an eternity. However, Madam Speaker, it is for me a great pleasure and honor, despite the graveyardship that I have to work now. I welcome this opportunity. I welcome the opportunity, Madam Speaker, because this opportunity given to me by the good people of Groseley is one that I welcome, and I intend to justify at every given moment, every given year, until the time comes when I have to be judged by those people once again, where I am almost certain that I will come out of the judgment with flying colors. Madam Speaker, the presentation of this budget for 2008-2009 is taking place in a context of the suffice doom and gloom news on the international scene. Indeed, some experts, Madam Speaker, have predicted that we may very well be facing a 1970s-style slump. The IMF has already forecast a cut in the growth of the world economy down to 3.7%, as was alluded to earlier by the member for Sozell. And the IMF further stated, Madam Speaker, that the growth would achieve very little pickup in 2009, and more significantly, that there is a 25% chance that in 2008-2009, there will be less than 3% growth in the global economy. Madam Speaker, according to the IMF, this is the equivalent of a recession. We are currently confronted with high oil prices hovering in the region of about $120 per barrel. We are faced with a situation of spiraling food prices and, of course, high prices of other commodities. We are also looking at a situation where there is a crisis in the U.S., a crisis of confidence in the U.S. economy. One of the main economies, Madam Speaker, that drives the global economy. And some financial experts are now predicting that the world is in danger of sinking into the worst recession in 30 years, Madam Speaker. And in fact, some are speaking of a depression. Now, against this battery of negative financial indicators, it may seem to some that our Prime Minister and Minister of Finance is rather optimistic in presenting a budget with a forecast for real economic growth of 7%. Madam Speaker, this against the fact that we only realized 0.5% in 2007. Madam Speaker, St. Lucia is a very small and highly open economy. It will no doubt be affected by this downturn in the world economy. And of course, the government has to embark upon clear and well-defined investments to ensure the growth that we are predicting for 2008-2009. Madam Speaker, it would appear paradoxical that we are anticipating such optimistic growth for the coming financial year. But I believe that the paradox may have been explained by the Minister of Finance in his budget address when he indicated a list of hotels and other infrastructural projects that are earmarked to start very soon. And of course, I don't wish to go over the entire list. Those projects include development of Port Castries and Port Beaufort, the head oil refinery, 7 major hotel developments in this financial year, etc., etc. This estimate of 7% real growth may well be an understatement or an underestimation, Madam Speaker. If the implementation of these projects are undertaken according to implementation plan. I do, however, wish to point out, Madam Speaker, that there are some downside risks to achieving the projected real economic growth at 7%. Firstly, Madam Speaker, the first risk that I see is that there is a tendency for projects to be delayed as a result of many factors. At times, Madam Speaker, you get overzealous, over-optimistic investors who make you believe that they are ready to embark upon massive projects, only to find out that that is not the reality. Madam Speaker, there are also cases of bureaucratic delays or obstacles which delay implementation. Of course, we need to ensure all necessary steps are taken as a government to remove those bureaucratic mechanisms and to put in place a fast-track process to ensure the necessary regulatory and other requirements for investment. The second matter I would like to point out as a downside risk is the possibility of our economy overheating. Again, I heard the member for Sozell allude to that possibility. Madam Speaker, overheating of the economy could lead to wage and price increases, which may be very harmful in the long term as far as our prospects for our economy. But Madam Speaker, I would prefer to have to deal with the problem of an overheating economy than with attempting to deal with an economy that has a downturn or a recession. I also note that while the economy recorded a growth rate of 0.5%, the fiscal position of the government improved substantially. This improved fiscal position was due to the buoyant revenues and slower growth in expenditure. Madam Speaker, it is not normal for us to see better fiscal positions or performances when the economy slows down. So I guess in this regard, the government has to come in for some commendation. There is one concern, however, which I would like to identify that requires particular attention. The matter I'm referring to, Madam Speaker, is the issue of low implementation rates, as I mentioned earlier, of the project and programs. This is a problem that all previous administrations have experienced, and thus far in our 1 year, 4 months as an administration, we too have experienced. And so I have repeated this because I want to just sound a word of caution. Now, Madam Speaker, I listened to others before me, and of course I may from time to time rehash some of the things that were said. I do not think that those issues could be overstated or overemphasized, because we must bear in mind all the precautions that we have to take, because, of course, while I would not like to join the leader of the opposition in saying that we are facing a crisis, but I would like to state the position that we have to avoid any crisis. I also note, Madam Speaker, that the budget projects a decline in the debt-to-GDP ratio from 69.85% to 67.68%. Again, commendable. This reflects prudent management of the economy by the government. Of course, it is no secret and is not a case of apportioning blame or condemnation, but in the past, the debt-to-GDP ratio grew at an alarming rate, Madam Speaker. And so I would like to caution that we have to remain along that trend. I also wish to commend the Prime Minister and Minister for Finance for presenting a tax-free budget, Madam Speaker. In light of the existing hardship that our people face with the rising food prices, the rising oil prices, I do not think in this climate, Madam Speaker, they can bear an additional burden of having increased taxes. In fact, Madam Speaker, high food prices, as has been indicated earlier, is a humanitarian concern. Many have made reference to the fact that rice, a staple in many countries, has become a scarce commodity, and there is hoarding of rice in many countries. It is my information that rice prices increased by more than 50%, and most other food prices are also sharply rising. Although again, Madam Speaker, in the last 3 days that I've been here, I would have gotten no indication of that if I consider the meals that have been served. But let us not be fooled. We have to take heed of what is happening in the world around us. Madam Speaker, we are looking at a global problem. There is therefore need for a global solution to the problem, and it is important that this matter be addressed at the international level. Having said so, Madam Speaker, we cannot pretend, because we are not in a position to control those external factors that impact so drastically on us, that there is absolutely nothing that we can do on the local level to stem, to mitigate, to nullify some of the negative effects of this current global situation. Madam Speaker, I am one who has been preaching from time that there is much that we can do other than complain to ensure that we mitigate the effects of those global influences. Madam Speaker, the Prime Minister and other members have indicated some of the measures that may be taken in averting some of the crises that seem to be staring us head on. The government has begun to act decisively by way of continuing to subsidize a number of basic products, including flour, sugar, and rice, Madam Speaker. In addition, the Cabinet has approved a list of basic items that will be subject to price control. While these measures will go a long way in mitigating the impact of food price increase, there are other measures necessary for cushioning the impact of the spiraling crisis. For example, Madam Speaker, and I think I heard the member for East make mention of the possibility of adjustments in consumption taxes. That may be a consideration we want to take into account. At the individual level, Madam Speaker, and I have been ridiculed in the past, and I do not want to present myself as some prophet or guardian, but I have long been taken into account, Madam Speaker, the influences, the external effects of globalization and trade liberalization. And I have been saying in the past, much to the chagrin of others, and the suggestions that I have made have been even subject to ridicule. Many years ago, Madam Speaker, and I've not been in politics many years, but some 3-4 years ago, on a talk show called Talk, I indicated that one of the things we can begin to do, when you face crisis, Madam Speaker, and I learned that from sports and from my background in coaching, when the going gets tough, you revert to basics. It never fails you. So in this case, I transpose that experience to suggest that now that things are looking difficult, what we can do is to go back to our traditions. Madam Speaker, I was ridiculed by the member from Castries East, I recall, when I suggested that we consider going back to the tradition of kitchen wagons. But Madam Speaker, today, it is not a mere suggestion, it's an imperative.
I don't recall ever having any contention with the member who goes on any issue, much less kitchen garden.
Madam Speaker, I will not want to dwell on this for too long, but if I may clarify the matter, the member on a platform, I indicated that, on a talk show, I indicated that the member on a platform sought to ridicule the suggestion and suggested that my economic response to the crisis that we were facing was to plant the kitchen garden. However, it has gotten to a point where we have to take it seriously now, Madam Speaker. At the individual level, Madam Speaker, we have to begin to grow what we eat, and like the member from Castries Southeast suggested, grow what we eat and eat what we grow. I would like to further suggest that at the school level, we begin to educate our children, educate them and train them in the habit of growing food, whether as a hobby, but growing things in the yard, that can supplement the food that they consume at home. Madam Speaker, it is important to make them understand that they do not simply eat to grow, but they also have to grow to eat, Madam Speaker. That is important. We have to begin, and I've already said time and time again, and again, the members of Southeast Castries, or Castries Southeast, made the point, but we keep saying it, and we are doing nothing about it, and I would like to suggest to the Cabinet of Ministers that they lead by example and ensure that at the ministerial level, that government purchases reflect that we purchase local. Purchasing local products, Madam Speaker, will help in many ways. Not only will it reorient our taste for what we produce, it will enhance and make more buoyant our local economy. Return to the tradition of supplementing our individual food requirements, Madam Speaker, whether it be by producing our own protein, through the growing of peas and beans, and the rearing of animals like we used to in the past. I would like, maybe the Minister of Agriculture may have better suggestions, but from personal experience, you know, even if you do not have much land, Madam Speaker, the rearing of rabbits, the rearing of fowls, and so on, can be done in the backyard to provide the protein that you need and to help reduce our import bill. Madam Speaker, collectively, it will have an impact on our economy. The budget, Madam Speaker, to get back to it, in my opinion, when I listened to the budget that was presented, the budget is a balanced one. It provides sufficient economic stimulus to the growth generating sectors, while at the same time, Madam Speaker, it provided strong support for a pet area of mine, the social sectors, namely education, health, youth and sports, and social transformation. In a nutshell, Madam Speaker, the budget provides us with a foundation to propel the economy onto a higher growth path, to reduce unemployment and poverty, and to increase the standard of living for all generations. Madam Speaker, I wish now to take a look at my portfolios. The portfolios of public service, human resource development, social transformation, youth and sports. We are well aware, Madam Speaker, that the public service plays an extremely important role in economic growth and development. I wish to also take the opportunity at this time, Madam Speaker, since I'm going to deal closely with the public service, to commend all public servants who have worked tirelessly to deliver services to our people in education, health, law and order, community development, local government, and the many other areas of the public services in the last year and before. I'm sure members here will agree that many of them work under sub-ideal conditions and give human service and make great sacrifices under less than ideal circumstances. Let me also take this opportunity, Madam Speaker, on a personal level, to thank, commend, and encourage those who have worked with me, my permanent secretaries, and all staff associated with my ministry and the various agencies that fall under my ministry. I will deal with those portfolios and agencies as we go along. Madam Speaker, it is important to appreciate that government services account for 12.24% of the gross domestic product, and it is the fourth largest contributor to the GDP. Moreover, the efficiency and effectiveness of the public services are important in catalyzing the growth for the private sector. Integrating into the CSM and the globalized economy requires our economy to become more competitive, more efficient, more dynamic, more responsive, and service-oriented, and more modern. This not only is a requirement of our economy, but it is also a very important requirement for our public services. We must therefore approach the matter of modernizing and improving the way in which the public services operate with dispatch. Madam Speaker, we have an excellent foundation upon which to build. We can build a modern public service which has as its hallmark effective and quality services that we can deliver to our citizens and to provide value for money to our taxpayers. We all are aware that the globalized economy has been facilitated by the revolution that has taken place in the information technology sector. A major component of modernization would therefore require government adopting and embracing information technology. Information technology, in its pursuit of providing quality, will improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the service that we deliver. In much the same way we speak about electronic commerce or e-commerce, Madam Speaker, I will talk now about electronic government or e-government. For as you may be aware, Madam Speaker, the e-government and ICT unit falls under the purview of the public service. Madam Speaker, different administrations have embarked upon reforming the public service. These initiatives, however, have experienced limited and in some cases short-lived success. And while the change of reforming and modernizing the public service is a Herculean task, it is one that we as a government must pursue with wholehearted commitment, as I believe that to continue procrastinating on this matter will be to our detriment and to the detriment of our development. Madam Speaker, I am determined to ensure that the public sector becomes modernized and the initiative will succeed, and I will personally spearhead and champion the programs that are developed by my department. In developing our public sector modernization program, we shall seek regional and international expertise, Madam Speaker, and technical assistance from various donors and overseas agencies. This would include, but not limited to, the World Bank, CARICAD, the Commonwealth Secretariat, and of course, other friendly governments who wish to assist. We have already begun the process of speaking to some of the agencies, and the feedback has been favorable. It is important to note that while we shall be seeking expertise and technical assistance, I want it to be made abundantly clear that the public sector modernization that is being sought is one that will be crafted for St. Lucia and will be tailored and customized to suit our unique needs and circumstances. Madam Speaker, I wish to briefly highlight some of the components of public sector modernization, and I will begin with the need, as a matter of urgency, to review the structure and organization of the public service. Madam Speaker, the last review of the public service was done in 1992, and I think it was referred to as a reclassification exercise. And Madam Speaker, you probably would agree with me that the time has come for us to review this reclassification. I think the time is overdue for us to review this reclassification. This review would encompass reviewing the organizational structure of ministries and agencies and a review of the grades of the different public officers. The Ministry of the Public Service and Human Resource Development has received numerous requests from agencies for upgrading of positions and the creation of positions. There is need for the ministry to approach this matter from a holistic perspective rather than to deal with the matter piecemeal or ad hoc. This is why, Madam Speaker, we need to undertake expeditiously a review of the public service. Secondly, Madam Speaker, we need to review the legislation and regulations that govern the operations of the public service. It is often said to discipline a public servant, Madam Speaker, is a difficult task. To dismiss a public servant is an impossibility. Some say that public servants get away with murder. However, Madam Speaker, there are ongoing consultations that are taking place on constitutional reform, and there will be the opportunity to undertake a comprehensive review of Chapter 6 of the Constitution, which is on the public service. This allows for the opportunity to review the role, function, and authority of the Public Service Commission as it relates to appointments promotion, disciplining, etc. of public service, of public officers. In addition, the staff orders, which are the regulations that currently govern the conduct of public officers, Madam Speaker, it is dated as far back as 1983. There is therefore need to bring in modern public service legislation that would be in keeping with operations and functions of a modern public service. The third component of reform and modernization is that of leadership and management. Madam Speaker, honorable members, you may be aware that many of our permanent secretaries and senior managers in the public service have retired or shall be retiring soon. We have not, however, put in place a succession or training plan to address this major problem that the public service faces. There is no doubt, Madam Speaker, that there will be a tremendous loss of institutional memory, as well as the result of the retirement of many top managers, weakening the entire service. The area of corporate and strategic planning is also a major area of weakness in government that we need to speedily address as we embark upon the public sector modernization program. The improvement in service delivery will be significantly enhanced with the effective use of information technology. And I can see the day when we can pay our driver's license, for instance, Madam Speaker, online, and receive the license by mail, not having to take the trek to Union, to the Ministry of Communications. Information technology will play a major role in decentralizing the services that are currently centralized. I wish now to turn my attention, Madam Speaker, as we speak of decentralization and modernization through technology, to the specifics of the e-government project. Madam Speaker, the government intends, as a part of its e-government development strategy, to utilize the available technologies to improve and enhance the quality of life of the citizens of St. Lucia. The e-government unit has begun the implementation of what is known as the Public Sector ICT and e-government project. This project, which is funded by the European Union, seeks to rationalize and optimize the adoption and utilization of ICT across the public service and enhance public-private sector relations with respect to government facilitation of trade in goods and services through improved service delivery to the private sector. Madam Speaker, that is significant, and that can go a long way, Madam Speaker, in further contributing to the GDP of our country. I wish to point out, Madam Speaker, that this project will facilitate the formulation of the policy and legal and regulatory framework for the future development of the ICT sector in St. Lucia. I wish to note that it is our aim to eliminate the ad hoc, sporadic, and disjointed approach of ICT development within government. In other words, Madam Speaker, we are going to propose to Cabinet the centralizing of ICT and e-government services under the e-government ICT unit. Madam Speaker, only recently, Cabinet gave approval for the e-government unit to administer and manage the government registry, that is, the gov.lc and edu.lc domains. The .lc domain, Madam Speaker, for those who do not know, is a national resource, and it is St. Lucia's identity on the World Wide Web. For this reason, Madam Speaker, we cannot have this resource at the disposal of just anyone. It is a national resource that we must ensure that we secure and protect, and that we have full control and administration over it. Public consultations were held in February 2008 on four pieces of draft legislation, Madam Speaker, and those legislations do not only guide and govern the affairs of ICT and e-government, but will also determine to a great extent what happens with the use of ICT nationally. The legislation looked at were Privacy and Data Protection Act, the Freedom of Information Act, the Electronic Transaction Act, and the Computer Misuse Act. The priority for e-government solutions are identified as 1. The development of an e-police system for the Royal St. Lucia Police Force, and a vehicle registration and license system for the Ministry of Communication, Roads and Transport. As I said earlier, Madam Speaker, that may very well make life easier for us St. Lucians not having to commute for the services that are provided by those agencies. And of course, in terms of law enforcement, given the spiraling crime that we are experiencing, not only in St. Lucia but regionally, I think e-policing can go a long way in assisting our police in their crime-fighting efforts. The establishment of a national ICT center, Madam Speaker, is another. Both projects are to be funded by the government of the Republic of Taiwan with counterpart funding from the government of St. Lucia. Madam Speaker, I wish on behalf of the government and people of St. Lucia to publicly express our appreciation to the government of the to the government of the Republic of Taiwan, of China and Taiwan, for their assistance for these projects. Madam Speaker, another area in which e-government units can assist is the Civil Status Registry project. Madam Speaker, it is no secret that to the chagrin of many St. Lucians, we are facing some serious problems in the delivery of services at our registry. The e-government unit is liaising with the Civil Status Registry Task Force in the implementation of the project to improve the operations at the Civil Status Registry. A terms of reference document has been prepared and submitted to the task force concerning the scanning of existing books which contain the manual entries for all births, deaths, marriages, and burial records. Madam Speaker, that will save us the tedious, arduous task of having to handwrite all of those information and being able to transfer those information electronically with greater ease. Community Technology Program. Madam Speaker, the main objective of this program is to increase awareness of the possibilities of ICT and the Internet and to increase the capacity for the use and adoption of ICT among the general populace. In this regard, Madam Speaker, apart from the Central ICT Center, we will be setting up a number of ICT centers throughout the island to make more accessible to our population, computers, and the use of the Internet. Of course, in so doing, bringing the government services that will be online closer to our people. I wish to now briefly mention the new e-government project, which is to be funded by the World Bank. This project is a sub-regional project, which is being undertaken jointly by St. Lucia, St. Vincent, Grenada, and Dominica. All countries that have agreed to participate in this project, which is entitled the E-Government for Regional Integration Project, or the IGRIP as it will be known, and it is valued at the sum of US $9.6 million. Madam Speaker, I would like to move quickly onto human resource development, as I have so many subunits to deal with, Madam Speaker. I do not want to dwell excessively on one area and have the problem like I did last year of missing out on some. Madam Speaker, I turn my attention to human resource development and training. These are two areas that are particularly important in the development of our human capital in St. Lucia and in the provision of required skills that is being demanded by the labor market. Madam Speaker, I am aware of the acute need to expand the number of scholarships for our students. On a daily basis, we receive requests from students who wish to pursue further studies, Madam Speaker. On the one hand, I am heartened by the volume of the requests. I am heartened by the fact that our students seem to have a thirst for further education. But on the other hand, Madam Speaker, it is indeed a challenge to provide scholarships to so many students. And of course, we have to bear in mind the advent of universal secondary education, Madam Speaker. The demand will increase even more, as we will have more people leaving secondary schools requiring tertiary education and making that demand on us as a government. I wish to assure honorable members that as the minister responsible for human resource development, I shall embark upon an aggressive drive to not only sit back and wait for offers to be made, but to source scholarships from friendly governments, from universities, and to any other agency, credible agency that is willing to provide any form of financial assistance to us to enable our students to further their education. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Deputy Speaker, in this regard, I shall actively pursue initiatives with universities and friendly governments, like I indicated, to increase the number of scholarships to our people. I, however, wish to state that I shall approach this matter rationally in order to ensure that our students' interests are fully taken into consideration in the arrangements that we make with those agencies. This apparently, Madam Speaker, and again, I'm just making the point, not necessarily wishing to attack anyone, because I have heard the call for a certain kind of decorum in the House and for greater unity among opposition and government. Madam Speaker, I didn't exactly take that call. No, Mr. Deputy Speaker, I didn't exactly take that call to be directed at me, because that is my natural, normal mode of operandi. Mr. Speaker, the case of taking into consideration the interests of our students and the special arrangements that have to be made for them, especially when they have to travel overseas, that apparently was not the case in the case of the students pursuing the diploma course in nursing in Cuba. And as far as I've been told, in the case of some students studying in Mexico. On that matter of the students studying in the nursing program in Cuba, Madam Speaker, I am happy to report that the Cabinet of Ministers have approved the loan guarantee scheme that is offered to other students studying for the degree program in Cuba, and that is now being offered to the nursing students studying in Cuba. You see, Mr. Deputy Speaker, the majority of those students enrolled in that program do not have any form of financial assistance, and they come from poor family backgrounds. So I think, Madam Speaker, that it was a necessary intervention, one that will benefit some citizens of St. Lucia who invariably will come back and make their contribution, whether directly or indirectly. Madam Speaker, Mr. Deputy Speaker, cannot make the transition as yet. Mr. Deputy Speaker, earlier on, well, it was yesterday when the member for Castries South made his contribution, the University College Monroe, which is an offshore university based here in St. Lucia, was brought into the debate. Mr. Deputy Speaker, I want to touch on Monroe, Midwestern University, and Grambling University, all universities that we are currently looking at as potential avenues for training for our people. Monroe College in St. Lucia, the St. Lucia campus, Mr. Deputy Speaker, has agreed to award 6 scholarships to the government of St. Lucia, scholarships ranging from between $7,000 and $10,000 per scholarship. The first set of awards were due to be granted starting April 2008, Mr. Deputy Speaker. However, additional awards will be granted for the 2008-2009 academic year commencing August 2008. The Minister of Education has already spoken about discussions that are in train with regard to collaboration between Monroe College and the Sarapan Luis Community College. I do not wish to further elaborate on this. There are a number of offers that have been made for this year in terms of training opportunities, which I will in a moment highlight. But before I do so, I wish to point out the opportunities that were provided in the last financial year, 2006-2007, Mr. Deputy Speaker. Mr. Deputy Speaker, some 270 students received scholastic assistance through the government of St. Lucia. And if I can break it down for your benefit and the benefit of the members of the House, Mr. Deputy Speaker, with regard to study leave with pay for 2007-2008, the number of awards was 62. However, the number of awards accepted was 47. Tuition refund, Mr. Deputy Speaker. We received 52 applications, of which 26 have been recommended by the training committee. The recommendation, Mr. Deputy Speaker, will be forwarded to the Cabinet of Ministers very soon, and a final selection will be made. And I assure you, Mr. Deputy Speaker, for the benefit of our members opposite, that when it comes to Cabinet taking decisions as to the granting of scholarships or tuition refunds or whatever award, scholastic award, political affiliation is not a factor that will be taken into consideration. It will be based solely on need and academic aptitude. Mr. Deputy Speaker, the Organization of American States, as usual, provided us with 15 scholarships, all of which were accepted in the fields of forensic science, social work, trade, engineering, education, clinical psychology, finance, environmental law, and information technology. Economic Course Awards, Mr. Deputy Speaker, we gave 29 awards in the areas, and that is to students that are studying at the University of the West Indies, in the areas of medicine, where 5 awards were given for people studying at the level of a bachelor's degree, and 24 in the sciences, also at the level of a bachelor's degree. Financial assistance program, there were 5 awards made in medicine, criminal justice, biomedicine, culinary arts, and business administration. Bursary awards, Mr. Deputy Speaker, you may be aware that those awards are granted to students who are in need and who are pursuing studies at the Sarapan Luis Community College. There were 77 awards in the last financial year, Mr. Deputy Speaker. Grambling State University, a program that existed in the past, under the past administration, is continuing. And in the last year, there were some 66 applicants, but 54 applicants were accepted. And of course, there was 11 that did not accept the scholarship, and 1 that was denied a U.S. visa. I'm just going into the details to give you a clear picture of what has happened before I go into what will be happening in the area of scholarships. Cuba CARICOM Scholarship, Mr. Deputy Speaker, 8 awards. Awards in the area of engineering, physical education, psychology, accounting, special education, and natural sciences. Cuba Bilateral Scholarship, 6 awards in physical education and medicine. The UK Commonwealth Scholarship, 2 awards. And those awards were in the area of water and waste engineering and development studies. And there was also 1 sports scholarship in the form of a grant in the amount of $40,000. Madam Speaker, all totaling to 270 students benefiting from those scholarships. If I can now move to what is happening for the coming year, Mr. Deputy Speaker, this list is not exhaustive because we are still in the process of pursuing offers and receiving offers of assistance. But so far, Mr. Deputy Speaker, we have received offers of scholarship from Korea, one scholarship at the undergraduate level, from the Izmir University of Economics in Turkey, two undergraduate scholarships, from the government of Russia, two undergraduate scholarships, and from Monroe College in St. Lucia, as I mentioned earlier, six scholarships. And those scholarships have been promised annually. Midwestern State University, Mr. Deputy Speaker, government is in the process of finalizing details with Midwestern State University as regards the granting of partial scholarships to St. Lucian students. These partial awards will be in addition to the in-state tuition fees which are already granted to students studying in this institution. In other words, Mr. Deputy Speaker, when students come from the Caribbean and they study at certain countries in the Caribbean, including St. Lucia, to study at Midwestern, though it is a university in the United States, they pay the in-state tuition fee, which means that they pay a lower fee than international or foreign students. They pay the fee that local American citizens pay. Midwestern State is proposing that should the government of St. Lucia enter into an agreement with this institution, by the year 2010, the government of St. Lucia will not be required to make any contributions to scholarship funds as detailed below. And let me explain the deal that is being offered there. And I wish to inform the Honorable House, Mr. Deputy Speaker, that very soon, in 2 weeks' time, we will be going to Midwestern State University to discuss the offers that are being made. And of course, that will be at the expense of Midwestern University, the government of St. Lucia only having to finance the cost of our airfare. Year of student contribution. For 2007-2008, they will be offering 15 to 18 scholarships, and the government of St. Lucia will have to contribute $10,000, and they will be financing scholarships for 15 to 18, a partial scholarship for 15 to 18 students. In the year 2008-2009, 18 to 20, we will have to provide the US $7,000. In 2009-2010, 20 scholarships, and we have to provide US $5,000. And in future years, after 2010, they'll be providing 16 to 20 scholarships at no cost to the government of St. Lucia. This, I think, is an offer we cannot refuse in light of the many demands that we are getting annually for opportunities for higher education by our citizens. The EU-funded Human Resource Development Project, Mr. Deputy Speaker, I wish to speak on this project because I am particularly excited about it. This is a project which is being funded by the European Union to the tune of €368,209 or EC $1.3 million. It is recognized, Mr. Deputy Speaker, that poor youth from the rural communities are by and large unable to access tertiary education. This project, Mr. Deputy Speaker, is designed to assist poor youth from the rural communities. The funds will be disbursed to the targeted students for the purpose of meeting the expenses at the Sarapa Lewis Community College. That's a program in addition to the bursaries that already exist. It is anticipated that a total of 128 students will benefit under this project over a four-year period. As I think about it, Mr. Deputy Speaker, the implementation of this project, I am reminded of Sir Arthur Lewis himself. It is particularly apt that the students who are to benefit from this program will be attending the institution named after Sir Arthur Lewis, because he was the one who indicated that the cure for poverty is education and not money. And we are looking at the target group being poor people who require an education to get out of poverty. Mr. Deputy Speaker, as Minister of Social Transformation, there are areas that can be dealt with by the Ministry of Public Service that are of concern to me, and areas that we will be looking into in the coming financial year. Pensions reform. Mr. Deputy Speaker, the last administration introduced legislation that progressively increased the retirement age to 65. This increase in retirement age was in keeping with the increase in life expectancy and the need to ensure the continued financial viability of the National Insurance Corporation. While I don't have a problem with the introduction of this legislation, you have to understand, Mr. Deputy Speaker, that there were serious implications for employees in the public service who do not qualify for a pension, the so-called permanent non-pensionable employees. It is also to be noted that effective 2002, all new entrants into the public service are required to contribute to the national insurance for their pension. Mr. Deputy Speaker, it is important to note that the mandatory age of retirement in the public service is 55. It therefore means that people who retire from the public service and do not yet qualify for a pension at age 65 will have to endure the intervening years going through hardship. I say so because...
Honourable Member, you have 10 minutes within which to complete your presentation.
Mr. Deputy Speaker, I would like to invoke Section 3210 to allow the Honourable Member to complete his presentation. An additional half hour.
Honourable Member, the question is that the Standing Order 3210 be suspended in order to allow the Member for Groseley an additional 30 minutes to complete his presentation. I now put the question. As many of that opinion say aye, as many of the contrary opinion say no, the ayes have it. You could continue.
Thank you very much, Mr. Deputy Speaker. Thank you very much, members, for your indulgence, considering this late hour. The point I was making, Mr. Deputy Speaker, is that after retiring at age 55, one has to wait for an additional 7 years or more to receive a pension from the NIC. We know there are serious implications to this in light of the fact that it is very unlikely that those individuals would receive any form of employment in those intervening years, and we have to wonder what is it that is going to happen to them. How are they going to sustain themselves until they qualify to receive their pension? Mr. Deputy Speaker, we are not in the business of creating a new class of poverty. So this, I suggest strongly, will have to be reviewed and the necessary adjustments be made to take into account the plight that those public servants face. I'm talking about a comprehensive review of the retirement age for different categories of officers, including civil servants, police officers, fire officers, nurses, teachers, correctional officers, and all other civil service workers. I quickly move on to negotiations, Mr. Deputy Speaker. Honorable members would be aware that the government is currently engaged in negotiations with the public sector union for the period 2007-2008, 2009-2010. It is my understanding, Mr. Deputy Speaker, that those negotiations are progressing quite smoothly and that the negotiations are being conducted in three cycles. The first cycle involves the review of the collective agreement involving all the non-financial items, and this cycle has been completed. The second is a cycle involving negotiations on allowances and other fringe benefits paid to public servants. This cycle is just about to commence, Mr. Speaker. And the final cycle involves negotiations of wages and salaries. In all, a total of 11 collective agreements have been negotiated with the different public sector unions. I am informed, Mr. Deputy Speaker, that the government negotiating team is doing the utmost to providing the public sector unions with all the available information, and a great deal of work has been put into this round of negotiations. I wish to commend at this time, the chairperson and the government negotiating team, who I know have put a lot of time and effort in ensuring that the government negotiating team is fully prepared. I would like to commend the other members of the government negotiating team for the commitment, as well as the public sector union, for the spirit in which the negotiations are taking place. And I hope I am not speaking too soon. I would like to implore the public sector unions to continue conducting the negotiations in the cordial, harmonious, amicable atmosphere that is established. Mr. Deputy Speaker, social transformation. Mr. Deputy Speaker, social transformation has the responsibility to develop the social landscape of this country. We are guided by the findings and recommendations of the country poverty assessment that was conducted in 2005, and to a great extent, we intervene at various levels with different programs with a view to achieving the 8th Millennium Development Goal and improving the standard of our Human Development Index. Our flagship program, in so doing, Mr. Deputy Speaker, is the Goodness FEC, which is an instrument through which hope is achieved for a noble goal. This network-based human empowerment program offers great promise to the poorer segments of society, as by its design, it seeks to eradicate extreme poverty within 3 years. The project targets the full cohort of approximately 3,000 persons who subsist below the indigent or food poverty line. Madam Speaker, let me now share some of the achievements of the various departments, such as the Youth and Sports Department. Mr. Deputy Speaker, Youth and Sports Department has in the last few months engaged in consultations that form the framework for the development of a national strategic plan for youth and sports. During that period, the ministry hosted a very successful annual award for 2007. At that award ceremony, a novel feature was introduced, and that is the introduction of the Inestimable Sports Awards. This award targets sportspersons who have made sterling contributions to sport by achieving excellence at the international level in their chosen field of endeavor. Mr. Speaker, I am pleased to announce that the two recipients, in case you don't already know, were Ms. Laverne Spencer, who currently is achieving great feats. I understand that now she is ranked number 2 in terms of best performances for this year in the world. And of course, Darren Tommy, who only last week we saw perform for the first time with a West Indies cap right here on our Boston Shoe Cricket Ground before his national prowess. Mr. Deputy Speaker, I wish to also further mention that Laverne will be going to the Olympic Games, where St. Lucia will be participating at the Beijing Games. And we are hoping, given her tremendous calm, that perhaps St. Lucia can take the podium and we can hear our national anthem at the prize-giving ceremony of the women's high jump. Mr. Speaker, it is not far-fetched. I only hope that she's not speaking too soon. My knowledge of coaching tells me that we have to be careful. It's still early days, but we are monitoring closely her progress. And whatever it is that the Department of Youth and Sports can do to assist in her preparation, we shall surely do. Mr. Deputy Speaker, in terms of sporting infrastructure, it's a pity the member for Supre is not present. We are continuing the project of the Supre Mini Stadium with the grandstand pavilion that will accommodate some 1,000 people. And only about a week ago, I was on a sports talk show when Mr. Avril of the Blind Welfare Association called to appeal to government to provide facilities for disabled persons at our sporting facilities. I'm pleased to inform Mr. Avril that at the Supre facility, provisions will be made for disabled, and at all subsequent facilities built by the Ministry of Youth and Sports, we will make provisions for disabled people. We also have the construction of a pavilion at the BG Field with a seating capacity of 200 spectators and 2 change room facilities, which will also be constructed as a substructure. Mr. Speaker, you had complaints coming from members of the public when the Venezuelans who were financing the project built that, started to build that structure on the playing area. We heard the complaints of the users of the field who wrote to the ministry protesting. And as one who always listens to the talk shows, Mr. Speaker, I heard the cries of the users of the facility, and we were able to convince the Venezuelans to relocate the structure, albeit at the ministry's expense. But now we have ameliorated that situation, and I'm very pleased, and I hope that demonstrates and reflects the willingness of our ministry to respond to the needs of our clients, the general public. There are a number of areas that I will have to just quickly rush through, because I do not want to commit the sin of not having dealt with my constituency. But suffice it to say, you will hear from the Director of Youth and Sports, you will hear from me as Minister of Youth and Sports, the many programs and projects that we are going to undertake in the development of youth and sports. We'll be embarking upon increasing the number of recreational facilities available to communities with extended hours by providing lighting to at least four community playing fields per annum. For this financial year, I'm pleased to announce that we're looking at the Grosvenor playing field, the Denry playing field, the Beaufort playing field, and the Supra playing field. And in this case here, no one can talk of discrimination. Two of the constituencies are represented in Parliament by the opposition and two by the government. So equity, Mr. Deputy Speaker. The Parvey Court, the member for Castries East, made an issue of the Parvey Court. I have refrained from making comments about this project because, you know, what the member for Castries East neglects to do is to give the history behind this court. This is a court, Mr. Deputy Speaker, since it was brought up by the member, let me just clarify. This is a court that the contract for which was signed on the 8th of December. Now, Mr. Deputy Speaker, I would like to remind you that the general elections were held on the 11th of December. So clearly that was an election project. Mr. Deputy Speaker, due diligence was not carried out, obviously, in terms of choosing a venue for that court. The venue, to say the least, where this court is placed is precarious. We have a situation where the cost of that court, because of where it was placed and the number of retaining walls that have to be built, the cost was exorbitant. We would have to spend in excess of $500,000, Mr. Deputy Speaker, to construct that court, when normally we can build a court for about $200,000. So hence, there is a little more than what the member for Catholic East revealed to the House. But we will deal with that in another forum. But I just want to enter to assure the house owner whose house is being threatened by the land slippage caused by the cutting of the cross that the matter is in the hands of the Ministry of Communications and Works, and we're hoping that after this budget is approved, that priority will be given to the construction of a retaining wall so as to protect the gentleman's, the family's property. The Sport for All program is a program that I have spoken about even in last year's budget, and we will be launching this program in every major community. And this is to encourage St. Lucians to develop healthy lifestyles through participation in regular physical activity. This with a view to reducing the levels of non-communicable diseases such as diabetes, hypertension, obesity, and other cardiovascular conditions. Mr. Speaker, the Ministry proposes also to develop an elite athlete program, an elite athlete support program, where those who achieve excellence in sports will be given support as they participate in regional and international competitions and they perform their ambassadorial duties in sports representing St. Lucia. The George Odlum Stadium, Madam Speaker, I heard a member on the other side indicate that I said that the facility was a white elephant. What I actually said, Madam Speaker, and I'm very consistent, what I actually said was that while I welcome a project of that magnitude, we have to ensure that programs and plans are put in place for the maximum use of this project, otherwise it will become a white elephant. and given the expense involved in the maintenance and operation of such a facility, we must ensure that we fully utilize the facility. The facility, as all would know, is located in an area where it is exposed to sea blast, and that has caused serious corrosion to the structure. We are going to ensure that we do not allow the structure to go into ruin completely. We have budgeted some $1.5 million for the repair of the George Mabon Stadium. In addition, the St. Lucia will be hosting the Paris again in 2009, that is at Easter 2009, and we have to ensure that we relay the track to meet international standards so that the games could be held here in St. Lucia. Basically, trust fund. Mr. Deputy Speaker, the Basic Needs Trust Fund was able to complete several sub-projects in water, education, health, access, vulnerable groups, and skills training. These included cultivars and forestier water upgrades, and water storage capacity was significantly increased by 350,000 gallons in three rural communities, namely Forestier in Gatry South, Saldivus in Suzel, and Gadette in Denry North. We also conducted a number of training programs valued to some $800,000 in the communities of Denry, Canries, Ancillary, Soufre, and Suzel. And our flagship project in terms of training for last year was the Women in Construction, which took place on the West Coast, which trained some 120 women in construction skills, namely electrical installation, masonry, carpentry, and refrigeration. Mr. Deputy Speaker, this was an oversubscribed program, and we had many other applicants who we had to turn away. It was a deliberate strategy to take care of the gender needs that existed, and we are also hoping that a similar program can take place in this coming year to absorb the many who still await the opportunities for such training. In the coming financial year, there are a number of things that are planned. For example, an adult, and I'm sure that the Honorable Prime Minister will be pleased to hear that, an adult daycare center which will be constructed within the next few months in La Cleary. This will underpin activities geared towards support for older persons. This is a campaign promise that I made in my own constituency, Mr. Speaker. I refer to it as the daycare for the elderly. But, you know, I guess we're going to serve the Prime Minister. I hope eventually the Basic Needs Trust Fund will see the need to satisfy the needs of my own constituency. A construction skills training for women will also be taking place on the East Coast, and this will be provided for 120 persons. A skills training program in Grosley, Moshi, so that persons can improve their income earning capacity. Expansion of the Babono Health Center in an effort to increase and modernize healthcare capacity for this growing community. I'm sure the Minister of Agriculture and the Minister of Health will both be pleased to hear it. Expansion and establishment of the Cornerstone Humanitarian Center so as to increase the capacity to cater for the needs of socially displaced persons, mainly the homeless and vagrants. Poverty Reduction Fund. There are a number of programs undertaken as a means of poverty alleviation intervention by the Poverty Reduction Fund. Time will not permit me to outline them, but let me just say that one of the major achievements in the past year was the actual realization of the merger of the Poverty Reduction Fund and the Basic Needs Trust Fund. Cabinet has approved and endorsed the merger, and to date, the Attorney General's office is drafting the amendments to the Poverty Reduction Fund Act for the establishment of the St. Lucia Development Fund, which is an amalgamation of the two agencies. Further, the Poverty Reduction Fund, through its membership of the Social Network of Latin America and the Caribbean, has caused St. Lucia to be one of three Caribbean countries to be recipients of technical assistance for a poverty reduction strategy called the Puente Program. This program targets indigent households, Mr. Speaker, and we have adapted the strategy to meet our own particular needs in St. Lucia, and we have called it by a different name, as I mentioned earlier, the Kudnesa PC program. The program will focus on units of intervention in the family and households. So we are hoping that through this program, we can implement approximately 80 projects and assist in alleviating poverty, especially taking people out of indigence. NCA, I'm pleased to announce, Mr. Deputy Speaker, that the NCA is no longer regarded as an agency of suspicion and concern. We have not had any scandals in the NCA over the last year under my watch. I'm pleased to say so, because I was very anxious to ensure that we improve the image and reputation of that agency, and they too are playing their role in community development and poverty alleviation. We have some 120% as part of the beach cleaning and park maintenance program. They also look into granting of vendors license, and they are also engaging in the coming year in the development of recreational parks. Mr. Deputy Speaker, as I move on, I will want to mention some of the programs that are flagship programs under the Community Development Department. The activities and interventions of the Community Services Unit are wide-ranging and focus on the implementation of a number of developmental programs and projects towards poverty. During 2008-2009, a number of activities were undertaken, and those include the YSDI, or the Youth Social Development Initiative, and the Center for Excellence in Sozell. Let me just elaborate a little on those programs. The YSDI, or the Youth Social Development Initiative, represents a social development initiative which seeks to fully develop young people in community development process by harnessing the creative talents and boundless energies. Some 200 young people benefited from this program, and we are also looking to extend this program in the coming year so that many more will benefit from it. The Center for Excellence in Sozell. This is a program in Sozell which provides holistic intervention designed to provide requisite skills for development and socioeconomic empowerment to individuals in the community of Sozell. I'm sure this will be welcomed by the parliamentary representative for Sozell. Only recently, Mr. Speaker, we had the Young American Business Trust program, which was launched in St. Lucia. That was on the 31st of March. And this program took the form of business labs, which provided training of trainers who would then go out to communities and train other young people in becoming entrepreneurs and developing the basic skills in starting up a small business through the initial short intensive and hands-on workshop. Now, Mr. Speaker, what we are hoping is that after we have provided this training to give young people the requisite skills to start up their business, we are hoping that the next step will be sorting of funds to provide seed money to those young people who wish to start their businesses. Community facilities. We provided a number of community facilities, Mr. Speaker. For example, the Great Community Center, which was completed with the assistance of the Poverty Reduction Fund. A community center at Techime, which will be constructed with assistance from the Japanese Grassroots Program that has started and will be completed during the course of this year. We will get the extra money, Honorable Representative of Anthony Canaries. We are embarked upon repairs, and those were done at 8 community centers and 2 human resource centers to the tune of some $255,601. Boys Feeding Center. Mr. Speaker, if you may, I would like to be informed that I have 15 more minutes left. Mr. Speaker, Boys Feeding Center. The Boys Training Center is a school for young boys that was established since 1960. The institution caters to the needs of two categories of young men, Mr. Speaker. One, young men who have been in conflict with the law, and others who need care and protection. The achievement of Boys Training Center, very quickly, is that during the period under review, the following were some of the more noteworthy achievements of the center. 7 wards, Mr. Speaker, attended secondary school, including 2 at St. Mary's College, and they are all performing well academically. I think that is a noteworthy achievement that has to be encouraged. As part of the rehabilitative program, 1 ward is undertaking an internship with a furniture manufacturing enterprise and is now able to fabricate furniture of an acceptable quality. As part of the rehabilitation program also, wards are receiving training in furniture manufacturing, computer training, auto mechanics, woodwork, and agriculture. We have a number of proposed programs to assist the boys in the coming year, and that includes, but is not limited to, counseling and rehabilitative programs, and we are going to set up for that purpose a counseling and rehabilitation center, and this center will provide rehabilitation and counseling services, and we'll also set up a computer training facility which will be housed in a retrofitted container and will provide the opportunity for the boys to learn ICT skills and have access to the internet, and this is co-sponsored by the Rotary Club of St. Lucia. There are also other programs such as the Agricultural Production Program, but time will not permit me, Mr. Speaker, to delve further into this. Mr. Speaker.
Honorable Member, you have 15 more minutes in which to complete your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This signals to me that it is time to change gears and deal with the people who are responsible for my presence in this Honorable House, Mr. Speaker. The people of Groseilliers. Mr. Speaker, I stand here today through the blessing and wishes of the people of Groseilliers. I stand here today, Mr. Speaker, with a solid, massive mandate behind me. I am, in fact, the member of this Honorable House with the most votes. And I heard what the member of Castries South said about statistics. But I stand here representing the largest number of voters in the entire island. And of course, I will not venture to play statistics and say I have the biggest margin of victory. But percentage-wise, I don't. But in terms of number of votes, I do. But that's just to say how well I've been treated by the people of Groseilliers, Mr. Speaker, and how much I desire to justify that confidence that they have placed in me, and how much I will continue to embark upon executing the mandate that they have given to me. Mr. Speaker, in the last year, there are a number of projects that were undertaken. One, Mr. Speaker, is the Groseilliers Town Square Enhancement. Another is the drainage improvements that have taken place in Groseilliers and the general beautification of the town of Groseilliers. Mr. Speaker, if there is anyone here who has not been to Groseilliers in a while, I invite you to take a visit. If you decline this opportunity and you remain too long, you may very well come to Groseilliers in the future and not recognize that you are in Groseilliers. Deputy Speaker, that is the transformation that has taken place in Groseilliers in terms of the development that I promised and the development that I'm delivering. Well, for that matter, I anticipate that I will be the first member of this Honorable House to come here on a post. Now, we also embarked upon the fortification of the northern end of the Groseilliers Town Beach, and that is a project that was done by the government of St. Lucia. Mr. Speaker, talking about the Groseilliers Beach, we are working in collaboration with C.O. Williams and IGY Company. As you are aware, the marina is being dredged currently, and CO Williams is, has that contract. Some of the dredging that will take place will bring up some sand, and we have liaised with CO Williams requesting that they use that sand to re-nourish the growth of the beach. That in itself, Madam Speaker, will cut down the cost of transport for CO Williams and at the same time benefit us by re-nourishing and enhancing our waterfront. Talking about waterfront, Madam Speaker, we will not realize this dream in the coming year, but there are plans to develop the waterfront of Rosalie. You will recognize that development has taken place around the town of Rosalie. Strangely enough, Madam Speaker, the town of Rosalie is the ghetto of the constituency. That is strange. However, I represent all residents of Rosalie, whether rich or poor. We do not despise anyone for the affluence or good fortune. That is what we want to encourage. We will not bring the surroundings down to the level that Rosalie is right now. Instead, Madam Speaker, the plan is to bring Rosalie up to a level that is commensurate with the kind of development that is around us. However, we are mindful that this development must be strategic. It is one that is designed to capture the tourism business that is taking place around us, and so we want to maintain, while Rosalie has been elevated to a town, we want to maintain the quaintness of Rosalie to provide a kind of village atmosphere for the tourists, to ensure that from both sides, the Rodney Bay, Pigeon Point Camp Estate, all the tourists at the hotel, that there will be an attraction to ensure that they come in, bring in business, spend the dollar, and provide revenue for the people of the town of Rosalie. But we will elaborate more on this as we go into discussion with the people of Rosalie. Just one point I want to make absolutely clear, I want to emphasize, that is, the development of the waterfront of Rosalie, Madam Speaker, will be a development that will benefit the people of Rosalie, especially the landowners who own property on the waterfront. I am saying so to my cabinet colleagues, I will not support the acquisition of those people's land, pushing them out, sending them somewhere to the back of Bus Issue, while the sharks move in, acquire the land, purchase the land, put in the development, and overnight the value of the land go up to 100 US square foot, and we have to be spectators to the development that is taking place. It is our time, it is our turn. This is our development. It is going to be for the benefit of the people who own the land on the waterfront, whether they have to enter into joint partnership development, or what have you, Madam Speaker, or whether special funding arrangements have been put in place for them. That is the plan for the Rosalie waterfront. As I move to the other projects that we are embarking on, the Labon Water Project, Madam Speaker, that is another project that is dear to my heart. The people of Labon have been neglected for years. The community of Labon in 2008, Madam Speaker, does not have a supply of fireborne water. WASCO has to truck water to that community, and there is an irregular supply. The people have to be bawling, complaining, calling, and sometimes they go for a day or more without water whenever the truck does not come to them. This, I think, is a thing that has to be made something of the past. We have to provide for those people the amenities that the rest of us enjoy. Madam Speaker, that was a campaign promise of mine. I vowed that I would not contest another election if, before the end of my term, I cannot provide water to the community of Labon. These people have been too good to me. Madam Speaker, if you were following the campaign of Rosalie, you would know that I grew up in Labon. And the people of Labon, I got about 90%, and that's a conservative figure, of the vote in Labon. So I owe it to those people to ensure that this is done. As I'm making my presentation, Madam Speaker, testing has begun because we are exploring the possibility of groundwater. Hopefully, we know that there's a risk factor. Okay, it is an exploration that is being done. There's a chance that the exploration may fail. I'm keeping my fingers crossed and hoping that when the drilling begins, that we are successful in getting water so that there will be some respite for the people of Labon, and that the perennial problem of lack of water would be alleviated once and for all. repairs to playing field is ongoing. They just repaired the current playing field. They just did some cleaning on the Brown River playing field. In Labuan again, Madam Speaker, I am about to embark upon the establishment of a kids' playground. Madam Speaker, we talk about the patching of roads, provision of electrification and so on. These are standard routine things. But what about the social amenities to improve the lives of the people? We know that we have a very young population. Many young people have children. What are the options they have? Do they have anywhere to take their children to play? Is there any place where the children can recreate? I want to create a kind of community that is family friendly, one that makes provision for children, such as the establishment of a playground in Labuan, and I'm also going to be establishing a playground in Grand Rivière. These are soon to begin. The funds have already been identified, and so the people can count on construction commencing very soon. Road repairs, I need to do this, listing roads, because to me, that is my responsibility. You don't need a district representative to even know that a road requires repairs. But since I have not been saying anything, Madam Speaker, the assumption is that I have not been doing anything. The reason why I have not been saying anything, Madam Speaker, is because I'm busy doing a lot of things. And let me just list some of the things that I've been doing. Madam Speaker, road repairs in Bois-Rouge, Carref, Degazon, in Grand Rivière, Bella Rosa, Tuya, Mastad, La Retrette Link Road, Piat, Corinth, Government, Cedar Drive, and a number of other minor repairs that have taken place. And as I speak of road repairs, it brings to mind the need for bus shelters, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, we have established two bus shelters, the Grosley Junction, where one was on the verge of falling over. We have rebuilt that completely, and Monjiro, where people had to endure sun and rain while waiting for transport, in light of the fact that there's no shelter close by, we have built a bus shelter, but to the relief of the people of Monjiro, Moshi, and the environment. There is a footbridge now. It's a minor project, but I feel very proud of this project, Madam Speaker, a footbridge inside Corinth to the back of the residence of the Honorable Representative for Castries Central, where the people had to cross a river to get to their homes, Madam Speaker. And could you believe that if it rains heavily, the children cannot go to school because they cannot cross the river? Or if it rains while they are at school, they have to wait until the level of the water subsides before they can go home. I think that is an unacceptable situation, and we are working right now in ensuring that we provide a footbridge to make crossing over that river, more accessible to the children especially. Well, we are providing services to the people who provide services to us in the community as well. For example, the Grosley Police Station, we have been constructed some beds for the police. And Mr. Minister of Home Affairs, I'm not encroaching on your territory, but they serve my community and I think they deserve the very best conditions. And so where we can assist, I'm sure you'll welcome that assistance. I will provide educational and emergency assistance, and I will not venture into calling names of people who have received assistance from that program. Madam Speaker, I think that is low. Painting of preschools in Grand Rivière. What I can assure you is that we do not discriminate, Madam Speaker, when we provide assistance. We give assistance based on need, not on affiliation. Because, you see, I made it clear during my campaign that I would contest the election as a candidate for the United Workers Party, that I would win the election and become the representative of Rosilly, not the representative of UWP or SLP. And so I give everyone full representation, and that is why, Madam Speaker, come next election, I'll have full support. So, Madam Speaker, another project that I'm particularly proud of is the ICT center that we have set up at the Grosley Library. I do. In this day and age, Mr. Madam Speaker, through you, I'd like to inform the representative for Castries East that the use of a computer is no longer a luxury. It's a necessity. It's an education tool. We don't want to know that the students for whom we have provided universal secondary education, when they're given assignments to do research on the net, that they go home and they have a disadvantage to their peers because they are poor and do not have access to the internet and they cannot afford to go to an internet cafe. Well, make your representation, the Ministry of Social Transformation is kind of more than ready to assist you. You see, Madam Speaker, that is a program I hope every representative emulates, because it is a worthy program, and I have no doubt that the member for Castries East will get assistance in light of the fact that his constituency has more than one
Honourable Member, I'm sorry for not informing you earlier, but you have 3 more minutes.
Okay. Madam Speaker, let me just quickly end by giving a closer look at some of the projects and programs that I've implemented. That is not exhaustive, naturally. But let me just quickly give a closer look at some of the projects that are earmarked for 2008-2009. A provisions market. Now, this will not happen in this financial year. I'm not going to promise that it will. But we'll begin the process in terms of getting the plans done and so on. And we're not going to burden the Ministry of Planning too much. I think we have a concept. We're going to use that concept and have a private architect assist us in that regard. I want to re-establish a credit union in Gozile. There once existed a credit union. Given the kind of economic crunch that we are going through, Madam Speaker, I think that will be a useful institution for the town of Gozile. That I will elaborate on and explain to my people as time goes on. I have spoken about the waterfront development project. Speed bumps, Madam Speaker, sounds like a minor project, but a big headache to many of my constituents, where drivers do not respect and recognize the regulations on the road and causes a hazard to my residents, in Edgewater especially. I want the people of Edgewater to know that the funds have already been approved for a speed bump in their area to curtail the speeding that takes place there, putting the lives of the people there, especially the children, at risk. Kaimaji, another area where a call has been made for speed bumps, and Bay Street. Since we have repaired Bay Street, Madam Speaker, some of the drivers use it as a racetrack as they go to Pigeon Point and back. The electrification program, I will be speaking to the Minister of Communications and Works to complete our electrification program, because I have high demand. As you know, my constituency is highly populated. Almost every square foot of my constituency is populated, is inhabited, and so we want to ensure the safety, security, and comfort of our people. The electrification of Gozile has to resume. Gozile Town Council, to the Minister of Local Government, Madam Speaker, I would like to inform him that equity does not mean equal shares. Equity means sharing in a way that the ratio will work out, that each person gets according to merit. Madam Speaker, I heard him, and I welcome that, indicate that councils will be getting $100,000. But Madam Speaker, when you look at the size of my constituency, the nature of my constituency, the volume of work that my council has to do, certainly you cannot ask my council to work with $100,000 like you would give some other council. So I wanted to reconsider this, an improvement, an increase in the amount.
Honourable Member, your time has expired. You should be winding down now.
Okay, I'm winding down quickly. And we also want to recommend that you upgrade our chairman of our council to a mayor. A status befitting of the post that he holds. Dauphin Street sidewalk, the use of the beaches, drains at St. George and Maritera Street, jet improvement, that is the construction of a portal and steps for the dinghy users. All projects we're going to have for this year, the Moshi Center beautification. Moshi will be the target and the focus very soon. We're going to beautify the center of Moshi, rehabilitate the courts at Moshi, and also at Grand Riviere. We have not forgotten Grand Riviere. Grand Riviere will be receiving a basketball court, and the Bonte, also a court. We'll be repairing the court at Bonte. We'll be building we want a home for the elderly, Madam Speaker, but that has not been budgeted for this year. But I will be doing everything I can to speak to the private sector to see if they can assist us in that regard. So a number of changing rooms will be built. For example, a changing room near the playing field in Grand Riviere, Grozile, and Corinth, and of course, the VAC Queen Norbert Link Road. I must ask Mr. Communication Minister, you have promised this road for a long time. It is about time. And we expect that your first order of business will be the reconstruction of this road. And of course, very soon the repairs on the Moshi Health Center will start. Madam Speaker, this does not represent all what I intend to do this year. However, in light of the fact that I have exhausted my time, I wish to just simply send by saying to the people of the constituency of Groseilly, as promised, I will stick to my word. I will continue to have the town hall meetings and web yard talk, as well as those web walks throughout my constituency to avail myself to my constituents so we can discuss and develop our programs and projects, and so that they can know what is in store for them as far as the development of our constituency and the development of our people. Madam Speaker, let me take this opportunity to thank you, thank honorable members, and thank once again, I will never thank them enough, the people of the constituency of Groseilly, and of course the people of St. Lucia. Thank you very much.